Hello, welcome back to Coach Enya Below the Bar podcast. So this week's episode, I obviously cover the usual, how my calorie deficit is going, how my marathon, half marathon training is going, started my ADHD medication last Monday, so basically a full week on it. And then I wanted to talk about weight loss injections because I get a lot of messages from people who are currently on them asking what I think of them. So we'll get to that. So just a weekly recap on my calorie deficit. So this week, the scale finally started to fucking move. So again, first 2 weeks, I was basically at maintenance. There was only 2 days I was in a calorie deficit just to ease myself back in, as I discussed in previous episodes. The third week, we were in a bit of a bigger deficit. We dropped down most days, and then things still weren't moving. And then last week we made a couple of changes as well. The week before last. And things still weren't really moving. So Wednesday just gone. It's Sunday now when I'm recording this. Wednesday just gone. My coach was like, oh, this scale has been really, really stubborn. Okay, let's increase cardio again. And let's drop food again. And, you know, he's obviously doesn't like dropping he doesn't like dropping food when he doesn't have to, because like myself with my own clients, you want your client to be able to diet on as much food as possible because it's easier. And, you know, life is just better when you can eat more food. So we obviously tested and trialed calories that you would have got from a TDE calculator. They weren't working. We tried increased cardio, that still wasn't working. And then we eventually, well, I think, you know, there was some changes made 2 weeks ago that I started to catch up. Basically, my scale was like not budging. 1 week, it was just last week, the scale was just before my last check-in, which was just this Wednesday. So the week before that, from not last check-in, the week before. This is very confusing. I do apologize. So I do my check-in every Wednesday with my coach. So we finally made big changes there Wednesday gone. But I think the changes from the last 2 weeks started to catch up this week. Okay, so the scale didn't start dropping just after 1 day of eating less food and doing more cardio. But my scale was frozen, like at the same weight. Like usually there's some fluctuations where it'll spike even or even drop. But for like nearly 7 consecutive days, bar 1 day, it was coming in at 65.8 every morning. I was like, this is quite strange. So I think what happened was then Thursday gone, Friday gone, and then Saturday, it started going back down and we reached a new low then into the 64s. Finally into the 64s. Like we start week 6 this Wednesday coming. So finally there's been movement. But All we really did is, and this just shows that you have to trust the process, you have to be patient. I think my body must have been stressed in some way, shape or form for the scale to hold that number so consistently, no fluctuations whatsoever. But yeah, I trusted the process, and you have to do trial and errors. Like I said, my coach had me on a certain amount of calories and things still weren't working. I trusted the process, I trusted him. You know, there could, maybe a long time ago, I would have thrown the towel in. Oh, this is a load of shite. This is not working. I'm bad at everything. I fail at everything. I'm not supposed to lose weight. It's just not meant to be. Where's Domino's pizza so I can order a family meal deal and drink a bottle of wine? That used to be old me, but not anymore. I knew with the amount of activity I was doing and the food that I was eating, like lads, I've only eaten out, I think, twice in the last 5 weeks. And not because I'm not allowed to eat out, but because, you know, I was trying to be really, really accurate with my calories. And I went for lunch with a friend, and then I was also at a wedding where it was a barbecue. They were the only 2 times, and there was no way those 2 events had a massive impact on the scale where it didn't budge. So yeah, I just trusted the process. And then, you know, as the weeks went on, I was applying the changes my coach was asking me to apply. And then eventually it gave way. So I was delighted that I stuck it out, because, you know, there've been times like this in the past where I didn't stick it out. And you kind of have to say to yourself, being like, well, the world's going to keep spinning. Time is going to pass anyway. What am I going to do? And I've mentioned this in a few podcasts. What's plan B? If the scale doesn't change and I get frustrated, what's plan B? What, go back to the way I was living? Well, not that I was a couch potato, because I've been, you know, a fairly active person now the last few years. But what's plan B? Like, go back to, like, you know, eating more than I should be eating. going out more consistently again. And yeah, that's just not going to make me feel good, you know, making my weight eventually compounded and the scale just keeps climbing. Like, things can't get any worse with what I'm doing, but they can only get worse if I go back to the lifestyle I was living when I was on holidays, where I wasn't, you know, watching what I was eating. Well, I was watching what I was eating, but I was kind of overeating. I wasn't moving as much. And, you know, after four holidays this year, it did start to catch up on me and my appearance. But no, things are moving consistently now, and I'm delighted that I was patient. And that's why it's very important to trust the process. Sometimes, you know, your calories that you're on, they don't work. And when I say that, that's literally you being by the book, ticking all your boxes on a daily basis, you know, a little bit of room for having a meal out or whatever, you know, deviating a little bit from the plan. I'm not talking about, oh, this isn't working for me, where you're literally only sticking to your calorie deficit Monday to Thursday and then you go off the rails Friday to Sunday and then you complain that the scale's not moving, okay? Trust the process. With all of that activity that I was doing, there was no way things weren't happening under the surface. So we're finally into the 64s. Long may it continue. And I start week six on a 14-week block. Now I start week six this coming Wednesday. So I still have 8 weeks. You know, that's enough time to lose under 4 kg. So hopefully I get into the 60 kg range. That's usually a sweet spot for me. 57 to 60 kg is a nice spot for me. I still have my curves. And you know, my jeans feel a little bit looser and I just feel more confident and I just like my shape more and stuff. Yeah, that's just a nice place for me. I don't be like chasing constant leanness. Like, you know, I do get to a place, and that's from experimenting with different weights. And I'm delighted that, you know, I have stuck out the gym these last couple of years, because honestly, it's made a massive difference to the shape of my body. I could see it when I wear certain t-shirts, when I wear certain sports bras. I'm like, I look so toned, even though I'm carrying a little bit of extra fluff as opposed to this time last year. It really does push shape on your body, and I like keeping that shape, you know. And then when you obviously pull back a bit of body fat, you can see it. But okay, calorie deficit aside, I will obviously give you an update again next week. And, you know, I provide daily updates on my Instagram stories as well, if you're looking to follow that. Now, people have been texting me, oh, how did you get the scale to move? I've been trying everything. Look, what I try and with what you try is completely different, because we have two completely different lifestyles. So there's no point me telling you, oh, I just done this, because, you know, I do a different amount of cardio to Mary next door. I'm on different calories compared to Mary next door, you know. So there's no point in me telling you, because if you apply that to your lifestyle, it's probably not going to work, you know. So I understand people are genuinely curious, but there is a bit of a science to it. And every single person has a unique lifestyle, and they all require unique calories to suit their lifestyle, you know. But marathon training, so half marathon training, it's this coming Saturday. So the next time I record my podcast, it will be behind me. It will be yesterday, basically. How am I feeling about it? Yeah, I've been looking at the weather, and the weather keeps changing. It's definitely going to be mild. It's definitely going to be around 20 degrees, which is, you know, not great. I was running today, actually. I did my last long run today. It was about nearly 11K. And it's tough running in the heat. It's very humid. And, you know, because I'm obviously back in the gym more consistently, my legs feel quite heavy because I train them more consistently. But this week now, before the half marathon, I'm not going to train legs at all. I want a fresh pair of legs going into that race, so nothing holds me back. But I've ran that route now twice, the Clontarf Seafront, and because that's where it is, Clontarf in Dublin. And it's a lovely run. Like, even when the sun is out, it is really warm. It is. I'd be putting sunblock on now. It is warm running towards Howth. Well, this is the way the wind was when I was doing it the last time. The wind was behind me when I was running towards Howth. But when I turned back in Sutton and ran back towards Clontarf, the wind was really strong and it dramatically slowed down my pace. So I'm hoping for a sub 2. Look, I'm not going to beat myself up if I get like 201 or 203 or even 210, because I got 204 in my last one. I'll just be delighted to complete it and maintain my progress, even, you know, maintain my PB. But the race does, you know, pull more out of you at race day, because you're surrounded by people who are in the same boat as you. People push each other, the atmosphere, etc. So who knows? But I just hope that the wind isn't too strong, the rain isn't too bad, but a bit of misty rain is lovely when the humidity is high. It really is. It really cools you down. But then I'm also conscious that I hope it doesn't affect like my feet, because, you know, like with the, if your socks are wet and the friction and stuff like that. yeah, I'm just hoping that it's okay or my feet are okay. But look, you just don't know until race day comes and goes. But I will be eating maintenance calories probably 2 days beforehand. Just so I have enough energy going into race day, because in fairness though, I haven't noticed my energy take a hit since I've been in a calorie deficit and since I've been doing the runs. Like I said, most of my runs are only about 40 to 45 minutes, and I was doing that much cardio nearly in my last calorie deficit and I didn't feel like it affected my energy. And once this half is out of the way, I'll probably only be cutting it down to 2 runs a week. I'm currently doing 3, just because my next half is until September. It's the Dublin half marathon in the Phoenix Park, and then I have the full in October. I'm trying not to even think about that, but I'm doing it for Irish Cancer Society, so that's why I'm trying to get a few halves under my belt. So, you know, I'm basically like well acquainted with long distance running by the time that comes around. God, I remember how I felt passing the finish line doing the Dublin City half marathon, and I said to myself, how the fuck am I going to do this twice in one day? Like, yeah, but look, hopefully, you know, I'll build up the miles and the legs. I'll build up the mileage. So by the time the fall comes around, I won't be a stranger to 40 to 25 kilometres. And then you only have to add about 6 onto that then to make a 42. Jesus, even thinking about it. Anyway, so that's calorie deficit, half marathon, and then ADHD meds. So yeah, I started taking them at the start of the week. I didn't take them Monday because I did an 18 kilometre run. And because my meds are a stimulant, I was taking caffeine gels. I took 3 or 4 of them during the 18 kilometer run, and I didn't want my ADHD medication on top of that because I'd be afraid my heart would explode, like with so much caffeine in my system. So I waited till Tuesday to start them. So initially what I did notice is, I don't know whether it was a placebo effect, but I did notice that when I took it, I kind of started feeling it after about 45 minutes to an hour. You just have to be careful because they are made for focus, okay, for you to be able to like be hyper focused. So you have to be wise at how you use that time, okay, or that superpower I should say. Because if I took that tablet and I took out my phone, I started scrolling on TikTok, like I'll just get sucked into TikTok. So it's up to you to use it wisely, you know. So I basically took out my laptop. I did a few things around my room. I took out my laptop. And I got a number of things done on my laptop. And what I noticed was my phone was beside me the whole time, and I didn't pick it up when I usually would. Or if I got a text on WhatsApp, I'd pick up the phone, I'd text the person back, and I'd be able to put it back down. When usually I'd use that opportunity to start opening up social media apps. And all of a sudden, 20 minutes has gone by from doom scrolling. So I was able to get straight back into the task at hand. And then, you know, if I was getting emails while I was on my laptop, while I was in the middle of doing something else on my laptop, I could switch back and forth, because that used to kind of derail me a bit. If I got distracted, I'd find it hard to kind of get back in the zone again. And I used to find it hard to multitask. But that, and then I noticed I didn't really think about food that much. I don't know whether that was a placebo effect, okay, but I didn't have that kind of like loud food noise, because remember, you're chasing dopamine when you have ADHD. You lack the same amount of dopamine that a normal person has, and sometimes food gives us dopamine. Like, that's why people sometimes suffer with binge eating disorders, because they look to food for comfort, and it gives them that little bit of fuzziness, that warm fuzzy feeling that, you know, other people might get from shopping or gambling or something like that. Some people look at food like that. Now, with me, I suppose I used to kind of get a bit of a hit of dopamine when I ate food. And even if it was just healthy food, I just used to get excited about eating. But that food noise wasn't as loud, now I have to notice, on that particular day. So that was kind of all that I noticed on day one. Day two, I noticed after an hour of taking the meds, I had a Zoom call with a friend. He helps me write stuff for my comedy shows. And, you know, usually I dread the calls, and not because I dislike the person or I dislike work, but because I have to focus. Because I remember when I was in secondary school and I would go into a class and it was a subject that I didn't enjoy, I would fucking dread it. I would dread it. But I used to love business studies, and I did very well in business studies in school. I didn't particularly like the teacher. The teacher was very strict, you know, he didn't like taking bullshit, but I liked that he was strict because he used to get straight to the point. And I really, really loved that class. I loved art. I loved geography. And, you know, if you have kids that have ADHD, you'll notice that, like, and I was listening to a podcast actually recently, on Jay Shetty's podcast. He had this guest on called Dr. Daniel Amen, and he's like a neuroscientist, and he's absolutely unbelievable. And he did an episode on ADHD. He did one with Jay Shetty, and he made really, really good points about ADHD. And he said, like, you know, some kids excel in certain subjects if they have ADHD, and they do well in certain subjects but do awful in other subjects. And the reason they do well in some subjects in school is because they probably get on with the teacher. And if they get on with the teacher, what's that? Like, they love the teacher, and love makes us feel warm and fuzzy. Like, that's dopamine. So if they get on very well with the teacher, chances are, you know, if they have a good relationship with them, chances are they're probably going to do okay with that subject. But if they clash with the teacher, if the teacher's not giving them a break, if the teacher picks on them, because the child lacks focus because ADHD, then they're not going to excel in that subject. And, you know, that's a 50-50 relationship where they both have to kind of come to a common ground and be like, I don't enjoy this subject because you give me a hard time. And then the teacher's like, well, you don't pay attention. So usually kids do excel at a subject where they get on with the teacher. So that was another good point that he made. And what was I going to say? Anyway, but there's, yeah, there was, I definitely recommend listening to that. J-A-Y-S-H-E-T-T-Y. That's the name of Jay Shetty's podcast. Just type it into Spotify. And it's actually only the episode that he uploaded last week, so it's fairly recent. He made a couple of other good points about ADHD. Sorry, I know I'm going off on a tangent here. I'm still staying on the topic of ADHD, but he also said that why some kids misbehave is because, you know, when kids do really well, and let's just say when you were a child, like, did your parents shower you with affection if you did really well? Like, oh my God, like, you did really well in that skill test, or, oh, you know, you really did well with football this weekend, or, oh my God, like, your dancing has improved so much, and, oh, you've got a lovely voice, we love when you sing, like, you know, or thanks for cleaning up your room, or thanks for cleaning up the dishes after dinner and stuff like that. Like, did you get much praise as a kid? Okay, because if you have ADHD and you have a parent who doesn't give you praise, I'm not saying that you have to fucking kiss your kids' feet all the time, but the point that he made was these kids realize that I'm not getting attention from when I do things well, okay? But I notice that when I'm bold, my mother pays attention to me. Stop doing this, you're always doing this, and you're always breaking things, and you're always interrupting me when I'm talking to another adult, and you're always doing this. So the kid starts to cop on, oh, I actually get attention off my mother when I'm bald. And that's usually one of the reasons why boys in particular, they are bald. I'm using inverted commas here. They lash out more. They're more hyper. They get in trouble more, is because they figure out, okay, well, when I do well, my mom doesn't give two fucks. But when I'm bald, she does pay attention. And I actually know some kids in my life who act like that. And, well, I wouldn't say in my life, but in my circle, you know, or even around my area. And I see the type of parent that they have. And, you know, like, they're cursing at the kid all the time, and when they're bald and stuff like that. And then, you know, when the kid does something nice, the parent's too busy talking to their friends to even pay attention. You know, like, oh, ma, look at this, ma, shh, I'm talking. You know, that type of thing. So yeah, that was another really good point. I definitely recommend listening to it, because he explores multiple different avenues. So, like, people who have ADHD when they get in relationships, people who have ADHD in school, in the workplace, people who have kids that have ADHD, if you have a parent that has ADHD. Yeah, really interesting. But the second day I took it, I was on a Zoom call with a friend, and I was basically talking how I used to dread, I dreaded going on to this Zoom call because we do it weekly, and I used that kind of connection to school because I remember going into some subjects in school and I used to dread it, but I used to love going into business studies and geography. I used to pay attention to those classes. But when I took this pill and I jumped on the Zoom call, nothing else like mattered, if you know what I mean. Like, I wasn't distracted by anything else. I wasn't thinking about anything else while I was in this call. I was like fully immersed in this call, and I loved that. But at the same time, I also felt like I was after drinking three cups of coffee. I could definitely feel my heart rate increasing. Like, I really could. And the only time I ever felt like that is when I used to work in an office in town. I was only like 23, no, younger. I was probably 22. And this is when I started drinking coffee. And I didn't realize like how strong caffeine was, because I used to hate coffee. I used to hate the taste of it. But I started realizing that, like, oh, the only way to socialize with these people is by drinking coffee, because they used to always meet in the kitchen every morning while they were making their cups of coffee. So I just eventually learned that it was an acquired taste, and if I had enough cups of it, I would start to like it, which I did. And I remember I had 3 cups in the space of like 2 hours, and I remember sitting at my desk thinking, oh my God, my heart is like pounding out my chest here. And I remember another time I went to see the Spice Girls in Manchester. I could only get tickets for Manchester, and we went to this nightclub after, and the vodka and Red Bulls were like €3 on special. Now at the time, vodka and Red Bull taste nice, but you forget when you're pissed that there's like an awful lot of caffeine in a Red Bull, let alone calories. I think I had about 8 of them. I did not sleep a wink that night. Like, I was on ceiling duty. I was lying in bed looking at the ceiling, and the concert was the next day. I was like a zombie going to watch it. But yeah, I remember lying in bed and my heart was pounding out my chest. But it kind of felt like that when I was on that Zoom call. I was like, oh, I kind of feel really anxious here. And I was kind of sweating and stuff. Now, that was the only day that happened all week. So obviously my body is trying to get accustomed to this new to this medication that I'm taking now. You know, I'm not used to it. It's a stimulant, remember, so it will elevate your heart rate in some way, shape or form. Might affect some more than others, but I had to take 20 milligrams of Tyvance or something like that. Sorry, you probably know what I'm talking about. I'm just really bad with names. It's definitely starts with a TY. So I had to take 20 milligrams of that for 2 weeks. So week two is tomorrow, starting tomorrow. And then they also gave me a bottle of 30 milligrams that I have to start on week 3 for 2 weeks also. And then I do a review with the psychiatrist who I went through ADHD now, who they are the company that assessed me and diagnosed me with ADHD. And they also have a team of psychiatrists, and I went to them, and yeah, that was about a year after I got assessed. And it was before I went to Oz in Thailand. I did a Zoom call with the psychiatrist, and then when I came home, then I ended up getting the prescription. So I have to do a monthly review in 4 weeks. Now, look, I don't know, like, I might find, right, they're actually not doing anything for me. I don't even think I need them. Or I might find that they are benefiting me, because I do find when I sit at the laptop, I'm benefiting from them. But I didn't take them today. Today was the only day I didn't take them, and it's a Sunday, because I wasn't doing much that required me focus. So bar this podcast and, like, you know, texting a couple of clients today. But I didn't need like to be hyper focused today. So that's the great thing about this medication, is you only take it if you absolutely need to. And, you know, if someone has a 9-to-5 job where they're sitting at a desk and they have ADHD, yeah, like, they will probably benefit greatly from it. But I haven't noticed a suppressed appetite or anything like that. Food noise is a bit quieter. But yeah, let's see how we get on this week anyway, because I will be at my laptop a lot more and stuff. And I'm trying to take it consistently as well, just to get my body used to it. So we're trying to only kind of take one day off. But what I'm also not doing is I'm not drinking coffee when I have it in my system, because I just don't want to feel more anxious than I need to be, you know. So I've actually started drinking decaf caffeine. And I have to say, like, another thing I noticed, sorry, is on day one, it does start to wear off around 3 or 4 o'clock. Like, it's not meant to, like, last you like 12 hours, but I did find that I started wearing off around 3 or 4 o'clock, and I started kind of like feeling like my good old self again. But I also felt like I hit a wall, like there was a bit of a come down. And I felt that like kind of a couple of days this week. Now, I was warned about that, like, you'll hit a bit of a wall. So yeah, I'm going to keep an eye on that anyway. So I'll loop you in obviously next week. But so far, so good. And again, everyone is going to experience the symptoms differently. Side effects, I should say, sorry. So just because you had a bad experience doesn't mean I will. And just because I have a bad experience doesn't mean you will. All right. And again, just because you're on a medication doesn't mean it's going to fix your lifestyle. I do think people who have, an active lifestyle and they look after their diet and stuff, like, they probably will benefit more taking ADHD medication rather than like still living a chaotic lifestyle and taking the meds, you know. Like, if I was still a binge drinker, if I still was a couch potato and took these meds, like, I probably wouldn't feel like they benefit me. But I do think, like, you know, moving more, eating better food, like, that's going to help you in general. And then the medication on top of that is obviously going to help you too, you know. But anyway, Ozempic, right, and Mounjaro. So what do I think of weight loss injections? Well, I used to be strongly against them, right, because I didn't know enough about them. But here are the pros and cons of them, right? I do agree some people actually do genuinely need them, and that's okay, all right? But I do think, just as we discussed there literally a minute ago, I do think if you do genuinely need them, you should still practice an active lifestyle and a good diet, all right? Because if you're taking them because you need to take them because of your health, obviously moving more and eating better food is obviously going to benefit you even more too. But it just means that if Ozempic is ever taken out of the picture, you will already have a good lifestyle intact, all right? You'll already be eating better food and you'll already be moving more. So it's not going to make that much of a massive difference. But if you take Ozempic and you decide you don't want to do any exercise, you don't want to improve your diet, yet your appetite is suppressed, because that is the job, that's what they do. They suppress your appetite so you eat less. But, you know, with eating less, even if you can only fit in 1,000 to 1,200 calories a day and you're still eating calorie-dense food and pure shite, you're still going to feel like shit. So, like, moving more and eating better food is going to make you feel better anyway on top of taking Ozempic, okay? So, I do think if you do genuinely need it for your health, if you're a diabetic, etc., try practice an active lifestyle and eat a better diet. And when I say diet, that doesn't always mean a calorie deficit. It just means the food that you ingest in general, okay? Because it will make you feel better as a whole. And obviously, if you've been told to take it because you're a diabetic and you've no interest in fat loss, like, obviously, you know, fat loss is probably going to be a byproduct of going on Ozempic. Lucky you, hitting two birds with the one stone. But there's genuinely people out there and they have bad food noise or a binge eating disorder, and they feel like they've exhausted every avenue. Like, they've tried the calorie deficits, they've tried like go to the gym, they've tried to do cardio, and they eventually feel like they're left with no other choice. They don't want to go to Turkey, they don't want to get the stomach band. And again, if you want to take it because you feel like food noise is very loud in your head and you are sick of binge eating and you feel like you've tried everything, this will obviously suppress your appetite. But again, I think you should still practice an active lifestyle and have a good diet, because if Ozempic is ever taken off the shelves, what happens then? You will still know how to live in a way that keeps the weight off you, all right? And I do understand, and I am very sympathetic towards people who suffer with binge eating disorders and like food noise just takes over their life. It is a thing. Food noise is a thing. People think more about food. Some people think more about food on the daily than, you know, some others. And it's incredibly tough. Now, what I don't agree with is people who just take it because they just don't want to put the work in. These are the people that I find, I just can't wrap my head around that. And I'll tell you why. If you want to take the easy way out and take Ozempic because you're just like, I couldn't be arsed with the walk and I couldn't be arsed with exercise and I couldn't be arsed picking better foods to eat, so I'm just going to take Ozempic. What will happen is, yeah, you're going to lose the weight. Happy days. That's what you were taking it for. But what happens if Ozempic is taken off the shelves and you never have access to it again, all right? You won't know how to keep that weight off you because you wouldn't have implemented the habits to keep the weight off you, okay? So the habits, obviously, that got rid of the body fat, you still have to practice them after you lose the weight to keep the weight off you, all right? So, for example, look at me. I walk daily, whether I'm looking to drop body fat or not. I go to the gym most days of the week, not most days, but you know what I mean. I go to the gym consistently, whether it be 3, 4, 5 days, whether I'm losing body fat or not. And I do a bit of cardio, whether I'm looking to lose body fat or not. I eat better foods, you know, whether I'm looking to drop body fat or not. But someone who opts to take Ozempic or Mounjaro and, you know, probably a list of other fucking injections that I can't think of, these people are looking for a shortcut. And the amount of years that it has taken me to build this structure into my lifestyle, to, you know, turn my life around, to get to a place where walking doesn't feel like a chore anymore, where picking better foods doesn't feel like a chore anymore, where I've educated myself, I've watched YouTube videos, I know about macros, I know about calories, I know how exercise works, I know how my body drops the body fat, I know how to keep it off. You aren't going to learn all that. You aren't going to learn what discipline is. You're not going to learn what consistency is. You're not going to learn what sacrifice is. You're not going to educate yourself along the way. You're not going to build mental resilience. You're going to just bypass all of that. And then if Ozempic ever gets taken off the shelves, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're not going to know how to keep the weight off you. So what are you going to do? You're going to go back to what you know. You're going to start eating rings around yourself. You're probably, again, if you're taking it, because you just want to take it, because you just want to take a shortcut, I'd still encourage you to eat better food anyway and move more. But if you weren't moving more to begin with, even though you were taking it, you're going to pile the weight back on. You're not going to have any clue how to keep the weight off you. So that's the con of taking Ozempic for a shortcut, just because you can't be arsed to put the work in. So honestly, if you are someone who you genuinely need it, that's fine. If you're someone who suffers with a binge eating disorder and you have really, really bad food noise, and you know you've exhausted every avenue, you've went for counselling and you feel like this is the only way to bring your self-confidence back, to build back up your self-esteem, that's fine. Again, practice an active lifestyle and, you know, eat better foods. But if you're someone that's just looking to jump the queue, take a shortcut, I want you to be aware of that. If you ever go off Ozempic or you can't get your hands on that again, you're not going to have the skills to keep the weight off you. And that is the most important part. Like, you are building character when you learn these skills, when you learn self-discipline. Like, and that self-discipline, that trickles down into all areas of your life. You know, mental resilience, learning about food, learning what fuels you, learning how to cook better, you know, being more active, a body in motion stays in motion, experiencing the endorphins, like noticing yourself getting fitter. Like, you're not going to be able to experience all that. And then, yeah, you just end up back at square one. And you, what are you going to do then? You're going to go on another juice cleanse? Like, that's, you won't be, it's just the dangers, in my opinion, of taking Ozempic when you don't need it and you haven't actually built up, you know, the education, the resilience, the consistency, the discipline. That's the downside to taking Ozempic as a shortcut when you actually don't need it and you just want to drop body fat and that's it. Trust me, I would, if Ozempic was handed to me right now, and there is people as well, like they get to a certain age and they're like, I can't drop the body fat. I just feel like, you know, I'm going through menopause and I feel like I want to go on to Ozempic because I think that's my only chance of dropping body fat. Okay, again, practice an active lifestyle, and, you know, exercise and stuff like that, and eat better food, because that way when you decide to come off it, because let's be honest, you're not going to be able to take it for the rest of your life. When you come off it, you'll be able to keep the weight off you. Like, I know some people who have taken it and they've already walked through a calorie deficit. They've already experienced what it's like to count calories. They've experienced self-discipline. They've lost weight before, and then suddenly they get to a point in their life where it's just not fucking shifting and they opt for stuff like that. But if they ever come off Ozempic, they can just put that hat back on where they have to count calories and they have to move that bit more. They have to work that bit harder when it comes to cardio and stuff like that to burn more calories, and they know how to keep the weight off them. But just ask yourself, if it's something that you ever considered, if you think to yourself, oh, do you know what? No, not into the exercise, not into the calorie deficit bollocks. Ask yourself, if you take Ozempic, play the tape forward, what would happen if it was taken off you in 6 months' time? You've dropped 2 stone. And then all of a sudden, Ozempic just falls off the face of the earth. How are you going to keep the weight off you? What skills have you learned to keep it off you? Have you built up mental resilience? Have you built up willpower? Have you built up discipline? No, you haven't done anything. It's literally like learning to walk again. That's what it's going to feel like. So I do think there's a benefit to trying it the good old fashioned way, the calorie deficit, you know, the working harder in the gym. Like, it takes time, yeah, but what you build in the process changes you as a person. It really does. And you can carry that with you for the rest of your life. And again, it trickles down into all different areas of your life, not just fat loss. Like, you know, I get messages all the time like, oh, I've got the band in Turkey, or I'm on Ozempic, how do I build muscle? When you're filling out a TDE calculator and you want to know what calories you have to be to eat to be in a calorie deficit, you know, you have to put in your weight, your height, your age, how active you're going to be. There's no box to say, have you been to Turkey or are you on Ozempic? It will just give you the amount of calories for, I'm just going to use myself as an example. Let's say I've been to Turkey and I have had half my stomach removed. The only information I can give that is that I'm 32, I'm 64 kg, I'm 157 centimeters and I'm active 3 to 5 days a week. There's no box to tell it that I've been to Turkey. And it won't take that into account. So basically, I'm someone now who has the stomach of a 12-year-old, or if I'm on Ozempic, I have the appetite of a 12-year-old, or the amount of calories I should be eating is the equivalent to a 12-year-old because my appetite is suppressed. And all of a sudden, this TDE calculator has told me you have to eat 1,900 calories a day to lose weight, and I can only stomach 1,000. Like, I wouldn't be able to work with a client like that, because we aren't taught that when you're doing a PT course or, you know, you're trying to be a nutritionist and all, they don't teach you about that stuff because we have to learn by biology how the human body works without these things. You know, like I can teach someone how to lose body fat through the laws of thermodynamics, calories in versus calories out. I can't teach someone how to lose body fat who has half their stomach removed and they're a 40-year-old woman, you know, and they have the stomach of a 12-year-old. I can't teach someone to lose body fat and build muscle who has a suppressed appetite, because you need the correct amount of food for that. You know, you need to eat more food to build muscle. You know, when you eat, you need to eat a certain amount of protein. But people who have small stomachs, if they wanted to compete in a marathon, they probably can't eat much carbs, because I know bread makes their stomach expand, and when they've already a small stomach, that's people. I have a friend who has, and they're constantly getting sick. Like, and then if you have Ozempic and you don't have a big appetite, how are you supposed to fuel properly for a marathon? How am I supposed to teach you to fuel properly for a marathon when you can't stomach more than 1,000 calories? Or if you want to build muscle, and I'm like, you need to be eating X amount of food. Like, we can't have you in a deficit if you want to build a big arse. Like, you have to be at maintenance or be in a surplus for a certain amount of time. Oh, but and you're like, I feel sick. I have no appetite. I can barely stomach a breakfast. How are you supposed to, you know, like, we aren't taught that in college. How to teach someone to overcome that. It's just, yeah. So this is all fairly new. And I'd say in about 10 to 20 years, there's obviously going to be more research done on it. I'm sure there's experiments happening right now with people who are on Ozempic or who have been to Turkey, and how they managed to build muscle, if even possible, while they were under the influence of those things. But yeah, it's something worth thinking about if you do want to go down that route and you don't need Ozempic. But you want to take it as a shortcut, we shall say. Trust me when I say this, you will benefit so much more doing it the old fashioned way. And like I said, it will trickle down into the rest of your life, and it will be something that you can take with you into the rest of your life and teach your own kids, you know, or teach your friends about sustainable fat loss. And you won't have to look at shortcuts anymore, or, you know, hacks and stuff like that to drop body fat. Trust me. You might think in the short term you're going to drop body fat and you're going to feel great again, but in the long term, you have to depend on that. That's like a crutch, and it might not be reliable in the long term because it could disappear off the shelves. And then what are you going to do? Okay, so you need to ask yourself those questions. Play the tape forward. But yeah, that's just my disclaimer. Look, you are probably a grown adult listening to this. You're big enough and bold enough to make your own decisions, but I just wanted to make you aware of the pros and cons. Again, I think if anyone needs Ozempic and they have to take it for health reasons, by all means do. If someone suffers from a binge eating disorder and they find that Ozempic suppresses their appetite, if you're someone who's gone through menopause and you've exhausted every avenue, when I say exhausted every avenue, I'm talking like you've put the hours in on the Stairmaster, you've been in the lowest calorie deficit possible for your height to weight age, and it's still not budging, you know, by all means do. But if you're someone who's never ever, you know, tried a calorie deficit, they've never stepped foot in the gym and they just think, oh, maybe down the road tried Ozempic, I'm gonna do that, like, really ask yourself those questions. Is it a good idea in the long term? Okay, thanks for tuning in, and I will be back next week with another episode and more updates on the calorie deficit, how I did in the half marathon, and how my ADHD medication is doing.